This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Stephen Lockridge.
Happy New Year, everyone.
This week, I'm going to talk about Vanguard, the latest Jackie Chan film, a little bit. Then we're going to go to Thailand for Deliver Us From Evil. Pop over to the Georgia Slopes for Let It Snow. Pop over to Russia for The Blackout. And then back to the good old USA for Robot Riot. Our short shot this week is a film called Burnt. And our DTV throwback is going to be Julia X. Now, everyone's chomping at the bit to talk about that one later on. So without any further ado, it's over to Rich. Let's crack on. Okay, so let's crack on with a couple of reviews. I'm going to start with the latest Jackie Chan film called Vanguard. In this one, Jackie Chan is the head of an international private security firm called Vanguard, and one of their clients is kidnapped in London's Chinatown and held for ransom. So he sends in two of his agents and to rescue them, and then they have to go to Africa to rescue their daughter from poachers and all sorts, and then the action goes from there to Bahrain, I believe. The Middle East, and then Bahrain. It's a bit of a globe-trotting film. Jackie Chan is 66 now, I believe, and I think there's very much an unfair expectation for him to still be doing the stuff that he was doing in Police Story and Project A, Armor of God, Dragons Forever, that sort of thing. The guy's 66, give him a break, for God's sake. You know, be thankful that he is still very much active in his films and he still insists on doing his own stunt work. Apparently there's a bit in the film involving a jet ski chase over in a river with a sort of a waterfall at the end of it, and apparently he came off his jet ski and almost drowned, you know. He's still doing his own stunts, and you can see the outtakes in the in the post credits as usual. So he's got two sort of younger but unfortunately blander guys as the sort of main heroes in this one, but they are very good at the action stuff. There's one of my favorite staples, the kitchen fight. You know, the restaurant kitchen fight is always good to see in an action film. If you can't have a fight in an elevator, at least have one in the kitchen, I always say. The weirdest part of this film is the sort of climactic thing, which happens in Dubai, as I said. Now, one of his previous films, Kung Fu Yoga, also was set in Dubai for a large part of it. And it's very similar. There's a car chase sequence using very high-end, sort of performance cars, sort of very expensive things. And in fact, in this one, they're all gold-plated, literally gold-plated cars.
Oh, I've heard about those.
So it's crazy. The only difference is in the Kung Fu Yoga version, there was a CGI lion sharing the car with Jackie. In this one, there are CGI lions, but they're in the African section of the film, and they're just as bad as they are in the film Rogue.
Yeah. With
good old Megan Fox. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this. The middle bit of the film, set in the Middle East, it's a brilliant action set piece, very reminiscent of things like Extraction and the Strike Back series. You know, it's up to that sort of standard of sort of gunplay and everything. It is very good. It's designed to be a sort of a Chinese New Year crowd pleaser. Yeah, that's what it was meant to have been back in 2020. It's been held out for a year. And it ends with this sort of weird thing where all the cast are on the screen wishing Happy New Year. it's like all pretense goes out the window, which is very strange. So it's directed by Stanley Tong, who did a few of Jackie's other films.
Did he do Kung Fu Yoga as well?
I think he did. He also did The Myth was one of his other ones.
Rumble in the Bronx is obviously the real classic. And Mr. Magoo he did, but that was without Jackie.
So, I mean, the last, you know, if you're hankering for like pure Jackie Chan, you know, the golden age, that ended for me with Rob B. Hood. That was the last film you could sort of point to and say, yes, that's a classic Jackie Chan film, you know, with all the kung fu and all this sort of, you know, the amazing sort of stunt work and everything.
It's more like a My Lucky Stars kind of movie, that, isn't it?
A little bit, but it surprised me. That film surprised me. I avoided it at first because, you know, and they very cleverly omit this from the trailer. If you ever watch the trailer for Robin Hood, they omit the fact that he's stuck with a baby for a lot of the film. They managed to edit around it in all these little scenes. But, you know, I thought, oh, great, so it's Jackie Chan with a baby. You know, do I really want to see that? And actually, yes, you do want to see that because
There's some really good fight scenes in that.
Really good fight scenes, really good action scenes, you know, good stunt work all the way through that. It's definitely worth checking out. And it's the last time you're going to see him in Yen Biu. And I think even Samo turns up for a cameo in that one as well.
I didn't remember that. All I couldn't think of is I never understood the title. I never understood why what that title meant.
Vanguard it's an improvement on Bleeding Steel, which was the previous film that he did. It's a bit more sort of lighthearted. It's more it's more actiony, that's for sure.
It's got the action and it's got the comedy, so it's more of a typical Jackie vehicle than
Big Man or whatever, yeah, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, this is sort of him being back on board, but, you know, he's not sitting behind a desk. You know, this isn't like Sylvester Stallone in, Lockdown 2 or whatever it was. But, Escape Plan, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely involved, you know, and he's doing stunts, he's doing little fight scenes and things like that. But the main focus is on these other characters, the younger guys.
Okay, so is it misleading top billing then?
Not kind of, yeah.
Should it be and Jackie Chan?
Possibly, yeah, something like that. But he's definitely, you know, he's definitely a presence in the film.
The thing with China, the whole globe-trotting adventure kind of thing that Jackie, I guess, took from the James Bond films. He essentially turned his formula, combined his work with the James Bond formula. So his movies like the Chinese equivalent of James Bond movies. You travel to like five or six different countries in lots of his movies and adding in that comedy and stuff.
Yeah.
They also have these broad casts. Chinese movies quite often have wide casts of characters, you know, like sometimes like six or eight, you know, characters you're following and trying to, you know, follow all their different subplots and stuff. And I know that the ensemble film is still very popular. So would you say that this is more of an ensemble film?
This is more focused. The Lucky Stars thing is definitely a touchstone of what you're aiming for there. But no, this is very much, you know, it's the same group of characters going from A to B to C to D sort of thing. You know, it's not sort of switching between plots or anything like that.
Okay.
From that point of view, it's sort of clearer and sort of more linear.
But who are our bad guys in this?
There's a mixture of sort of like Middle Eastern terrorists and some British guys actually as well. I can't remember the names of them, but they do fight very well. The stuff at the beginning is really good. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this. But you know, if you're hankering for the classic Jackie, then go and watch some classic Jackie. You know, don't expect him to be, you know, doing this sort of stuff he was sort of 30 years ago. Because it's not going to happen. It's the new guys coming through. I just wish they were given a bit more characterization than they are in this one. There you go. Yeah. still enjoyed it.
How are you going to score it, Mike? You're the only one who's seen it, by the way.
I've only seen it, so yeah, it's a very entertaining 7 out of 10. Our next review is Deliver Us From Evil. A former secret agent is now working as a covert vigilante assassin. As he prepares to leave his killing ways behind him, however, he's drawn to Thailand to find a young girl who's been abducted by organ farmers. That's not all of his problems, however, as the psychotic brother of his last target is also hell-bent on getting revenge. Okay, so a little bit of a slow start to this one, Steve. After the initial attack, which was very reminiscent of the film Leon, I found.
Yes.
So the opening bit, which is really cool. So we've got this character who he used to be a sort of part of this sort of covert special ops group who got outed by the press and then disbanded. And so he's sort of on the run and ended up becoming a sort of this sort of vigilante assassin, taking out sort of various yakuza and people like that. But he's decided that he's had enough. And unfortunately, it's sort of dovetailed into this kidnapping thing that happens with his ex-girlfriend, who's now living in Thailand. So it's a bit convoluted, but he goes over there to sort of try and help out. And it gets very messy because this brilliant character called Ray the Butcher, who happens to be the brother of the guy he's the last guy he killed, the last target he had this brother called Ray the Butcher, and he's coming after him, and he's absolutely superb. Just this crazy psychotic guy.
He just doesn't give a flying fuck, does he? Really, he's absolutely nuts. But yeah, like I say, it's a little bit convoluted at the beginning. Just throwing all the strands together and getting the story going. But once it does, it really does kick into gear. Very, very grim story, I thought. You know, especially with the organ farming and stuff like that.
The whole thing, because, you know, they're targeting these kids. Going to step back a bit, because the girlfriend gets caught up in this scam, doesn't she, about this sort of new home thing. Was it a golf course or?
Yeah,
it was a real estate deal, wasn't it? And it's like, well, you know, she's going, well, what's the catch? It seems like too good to be true. And the what's actually happening is they're fleecing all her money, kidnapping her kid for a ransom. And then you know, they kill her off, as we find out. That's not a spoiler. That's what happens quite early on. But the whole thing, and when he catches up with the guy, he's just telling him it really matter-of-factly. You know, it's like the, you know, this, yeah, oh yeah, we kill them. Yeah, it's what we do. You know, it's just so matter-of-fact. It's like, it's worse than sort of being a psychopath. It's like, yeah, human life just does not matter. You know, it's just a thing that's in the way. It's freaky to sort of get into that sort of mindset. You know, it's bizarre.
But that's the thing. The tone of it changes throughout the film, because then, you know, once he gets to Bangkok and then like gets his guide, who's like the transsexual, club worker, who's quite annoying, you know, and. She reminds me of like Thingy out of Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
In a way, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just there to scream and be annoying. And
The character she reminded me of was, is it Bridget Fonda's character in Kiss of the Dragon? Because she played.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I saw there.
Yeah. But it's brilliantly shot, brilliantly choreographed. And we've got a new favourite hitman in Ray the Butcher. I think he's absolutely fantastic.
There's a brilliant scene where you know, Ray's basically turned around to his guys and said, right, find me two locals who are gonna help me out to find this thing. And they make the stupid mistake of trying to double cross him. And it's just brilliant, you know. I mean, I've said it a number of times. You know, I always love it when bad guys sort of underestimate who they're trying to stand up to and stuff like that. You know, they think, we've fooled this guy into coming to this room where there's like 10 of us, you know, we're going to take him out. It's like, no, this is Ray the Butcher.
Nope. You're teaming with. No, it's...
But the punch, and the thing is, the punches, you know, this, the sound effect and the reaction shots, you know, you really feel like he's hitting them with like slabs of meat sort of thing. You know, it's, a guy gets like punched through a window and it's just really, really well done. Really good. So yeah, I suppose, Mike, the closest that I come with this film is The Man from Nowhere. I don't know if you've seen that.
No,
it's it has sort of similarities to it's but the other one is as we mentioned, Leon as well, of course. So, in that sort of ballpark.
Yeah, you've also, Mike, you've got a fight in a lift as well.
Indeed, we do. Yeah, we have a good, really good one. Yeah, really good sort of fight in the lift going on. As a sort of a minor character, we've also got, I'm going to murder his name, we've got Vitaya Pansringam, who has been in a number of these things. He was in Only God Forgives as the police chief who beat up Ryan Gosling. And he's also in another film called The Prey, which was very good. I saw earlier this year. Mm. Excuse me. This is solid stuff, you know, really, really good. It goes completely off the rails at certain points because obviously, you know, a hero is trying to sort of track down these organ farmers, you know, before they sort of kill this girl. And at the same time, you've got this absolute psycho sort of chasing him down. You know, he's got no sort of qualms about sort of collateral damage or anything. So it gets crazy.
And you get a SWAT team involved as well.
Definitely recommend this. So I'm giving this a solid 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll agree on that one.
Mm-hmm. 2 8s for Beyond Good and Evil. Is that right? Deliver Us from Evil, sorry. No,
Deliver Us from Evil.
Deliver Us from Evil. Beyond Good and Evil is a completely different film. Deliver Us from Evil, 2 8s from the DTV Digest. Our next review is Let It Snow. Mia and Max are a young American couple who have traveled to Georgia to do some snowboarding on the notorious Black Ridge. However, not long after they arrive, tragedy strikes and Mia finds herself not only stranded but hunted by a mysterious black-clad snow scooter rider. Let's go with Steve.
Right, we start off quite well. And then nothing much happens. It's beautifully shot. But to be honest, I found this quite boring. You get an hour in and there's been one slightly scary scene. Mm. And it's basically a woman wandering around in the snow for an hour. And it just didn't grab me at all. And the ending really pissed me off, to be fair. But
I'm so glad you said that. Rich, what do you make of Let It Snow?
Yeah, I liked it. It was interesting. I wasn't quite sure what I was in for when it started because it begins with a Russian version of Let It Snow. Was that Bing Crosby? Did he do it? Did he do it originally? Yeah. So it's got like a Christmas theme going on in the background because this is it's set at Christmas, but you know it's not a massively Christmassy film. But it only struck me when we were watching it and the song kicks in. I was like, of course it's a Christmas song, Christmas theme kind of thing. So it's quite odd that it got released after Christmas. It would have been great to cover this one on our Christmas episode. But it's got that familiar setup of a young couple go to a place. Bad things happen to them, you know. Eden Lake, you know, millions of other films you could think of that do this kind of thing. But the in that setup of it just being about a couple, you've kind of got that limitation. You know, they don't introduce a whole bunch of other supporting characters who can be fodder in the slasher movie kind of scenario. So it's much more of a cat and mouse kind of story. Probably the closest thing I can think of it recently that we watched was the Tom Berenger film, Blood and Money. But, you know, very different movie. This is like a full-on horror movie. Mm. But it kept reminding me of other stuff like Cold Prey or Fritzwilt, as it was originally called, which is a very memorable Roar Utag slasher movie. That from Norway, and you know, there are nods to The Shining and stuff, and they go to this hotel, which is a bit weird, and there's no one there, and there's some strange things, perhaps a little bit spooky going on, not quite sure. But although I'll echo Steve's sentiment, it looks amazing. I mean, the locations in, I think it's the Caucasus in Georgia. The mountains look absolutely incredible. So the cinematography is really good there. So they filmed it really well. I mean, it's not easy to film in these locations. You've got to take out all the stuff and you know, trying to set yourself up and everything. And they would have been, you know, the elements to battle, almost like documentary filmmakers have to deal with, I think. So they got that right. But the story is too familiar and too run-of-the-mill and, you know, not satisfying enough. You know, there's plot elements introduced. Mm. And then, you know, we get exposition at various points through the story. But it's not overly satisfying. The main problem is there's not enough story to sustain whatever, I think it's like an hour and a half or just over an hour and a half minute running time. So what you get is the young woman encounters the killer who she then gets away from, only to then run into him again and the cycle begin again. So that happens over and over. And I know it's a cat and mouse thing, but in some of the cases, it's just kind of like, it seems overly convenient of how they manage to keep running into each other in this vast landscape. And culminating with the bit that happens at the end. It's like, well, out of the whole area, how did they know that she was going to get to that point to find that thing? But even before that, there was a bit where, you know, she gets covered in an avalanche or something. But she's found really quickly. You know, they know the exact spot where to find her. I mean, what are the chances? I mean, that reminded me of something like, I think it was I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. You know, it's like the killer's, you know, hiding under the beach or something, and the victim conveniently walks to the precise location that they are. You know, there's that kind of ridiculousness, which is a shame. I think it's good. I think it would have made a really good short, but there's not enough to sustain the full running time.
It's like you say, you introduce two characters into it, and that's it. So there's nowhere really for it to go to ratchet any real tension or anything, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. So
there was that Maggie Q film as well, which had a similar kind of thing. You know, husband goes missing, she's running around looking for him, but she had more characters to interact with.
Yeah,
you know, there was a bit more going on.
So the opening sequence is pretty horrific. Not only what happens, but the reaction to it. You know, again, that sort of callous nature. Basically these two snowboarders accidentally kill this girl by colliding into her, and then their attitude is, "Well, we better get out of here. We don't want to get involved in this." I'm thinking, you fucking killed her. You're involved. You know, it's not like you're an innocent bystander who just happened across something. You fucking, you know, so. You know, that is the catalyst for what happens in the film. But what happens in the film is 3 years later and, you know, dozens of victims later. So, you know, you don't even have this sort of Friday the 13th thing of where it's like, you know, the previous sort of camp counselor's been sort of tracked down and things like that. It's completely... You know, the actual vendetta is just a vendetta for its own sake now.
You do get a crazy Ralph kind of character within the weird receptionist who kind of warns him, "Oh, you mustn't go. Yeah, you mustn't go to the Black Ridge."
Yeah, and I wish more had been set in the hotel, you know, with maybe some other characters. I mean, we do see, you know, right at the beginning, there's another person who's been killed, you know, and they're sort of bringing the body out.
Right.
And with you know, why weren't they involved in, you know, in the story? It's like, oh.
Yeah, but having said that, why would you ID a body in a hotel fucking car park, not in a police station?
Yeah, but I totally agree with a pair of you. You know, so once she's on the slopes and everything, and the initial sort of disappearance, it's just following her around, you know, going through adversity after adversity, and. Without sort of really, you know, you don't get sort of any sort of confrontation scene. You know, there's no sort of like showdown between the final girl and the killer or anything like that. Instead, we just get this sort of ending. And as I agree with you, I just felt really pissed off with that ending. It's just like
I was fuming. It's like seriously, I've sat through this
after all that. All that. That's what happens. It's like. Yeah. Fuck you, you know. Which is a shame because. Oh, wait,
can I just check which ending are we talking about? Before the credits or during the credits? Oh, okay.
Before the credits. Mm. Yeah.
The snowman. Thing. Okay. Well, I didn't have a problem with that.
No, I will talk about it.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but it just seemed pointless.
I can't say why because it'll give it away. But anyway, so scores on the doors. I've got to give this a 5.
I'm gonna
go 6.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go 5 just for the cinematography. It looks great. Well,
just as a sort of final thing, I mean the characters were dubbed, right?
No.
No,
no, actually, no. It was shot in English. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Ukrainian-Georgian production, but it's been made. Yeah. It's been made to in the style of an American movie, so they've cast Americans and.
Right. Okay.
Well, no, actually, because Mia is actually Georgian.
Mm. She's Georgian, is she?
Sankno.
Oh, yeah, I apologize. Okay.
Yeah,
Ukrainian. Sorry.
Mm. Well, she's either doing well with the American accent, which is quite feasible, or she's been dubbed. It didn't sound to me like there was any dubbing going on.
Yeah, it just sort of felt slightly removed. But there you go. So that's 2 6s and a 5 for Let It Snow. Our next review is Blackout Invasion Earth. An electromagnetic pulse from outer space throws 99% of the world into darkness, leaving a small area of Eastern Europe still intact. A task team of special forces is sent into the dark zone to try and discover what has happened, but the real answers lie elsewhere. Now, Rich, this is another big budget sci-fi movie from Russia. They do seem to like these. I think it's fair to say that this is visually stunning. It's great to look at, not so great to watch.
In my view, I enjoyed watching it. I really? Didn't have any problem with it whatsoever. In that sense, the Russian sci-fi blockbuster that it is. I mean, there's. Artillery on display left, right, and center. It's a big there's big action set pieces. The film itself is a bit muddled. The concept of it essentially develops into a variation on a zombie movie, which is quite interesting, but it's something we've seen quite a lot of already. So the closest I equate this to is like Redcon 1. So you've got like the military up against the zombies. This is the military up against a force that ends up being under sort of a mind control kind of that kind of thing.
It reminded me a bit of Life Force as well, actually.
I think the thing is about this is the themes have been used in a lot of film. I mean, even something like Invasion Planet Earth, I think there's some similarities. The Signal, do you remember the sci-fi film where there's this signal that comes out and turns people crazy?
I do remember that one. So, I mean, there's elements of this I do like. For example, the visuals are superb. The futuristic Moscow bits that we see, you know, with the flying cars and things like that.
I could have done without that, to be honest.
It looked like a very clean version of sort of Blade Runner. I thought that was doing all right. Excuse me a minute. But I just found their story itself to be very muddled, as you say. You know, there's an element in there to do with these people who've been turned into psychics. And they've been turned into psychics by a previous alien invasion, which we never hear about, or, you know, it's mentioned like once or something. Oh yeah, that was because of that other thing that happened. They left all these guys being with psychic abilities, and that's basically all we get of it. But it's so nihilistic as well. The whole thing with the aliens, it has this sort of very nihilistic sort of viewpoint. So,
but even that whole thing about, I don't really want to. I shouldn't say too much because these are all things that are revealed along the way. But the revelations about why it is that the humans can be controlled by the aliens is itself quite derivative. I think you could probably go back to stuff like Quatermass and that and say there's similarities with that. The Blade Runner-ish stuff is interesting because it starts out with that kind of stuff, but then doesn't really do any more of it.
Yeah, it ditches it.
Abandons it. and then it becomes basically it just looking like any other, bleak future. They go to a very sort of nondescript, suburban locations, essentially, that just happen to be abandoned. So it's more like Chernobyl. You know, it's like Pripyat in Chernobyl. That's kind of what it reminds you of. There's some interesting action sequences, and obviously the aliens know martial arts. It's a bit like a Japanese alien movies in Godzilla or something. They're all martial arts fighting, and they're edited in quite an interesting way, I suppose. But there's a whole really. The film has what it seems to be its climax, which takes place on a rooftop. But then there's a whole other section after it, which is basically a really long epilogue.
It's a long epilogue, but it's setting up yet another chapter, isn't it?
Basically. Yes. So I'm not sure. That was kind of lost me a little bit there because I was thinking they're trying to introduce too much at that stage. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. There was one thing. They introduced two sets of characters, man and woman, whose relationships develop through the movie. And one couple completely disappears for like half an hour or so. And I kept thinking, are they coming back? What's going on? And then they do. But that was a bit of a distraction because you think, have they forgotten these characters? Because you would have them, you touch base with the characters, you check in with them. That seemed like that could have been done better, I think, rather than making us think, hang on, have you lost control of your story? You've dropped. Because I have seen films like that where characters just get dropped and they're never seen of again. I like this. It's probably one of the Russian sci-fi films I've enjoyed the most. I mean, they've been getting released quite frequently for many years now. And some of them, there was one called The Interceptor, which was pretty incomprehensible, if I recall correctly.
We covered that on an earlier show. I think me and Dave Wayne looked at that one.
Okay.
A long time ago. So I don't know. I thought this was a bit of a mess. It starts in media res, as you know. I hate that, especially since it's like it doesn't actually take that long to get to that point anyway in the story. So it seemed pretty pointless. But the one bit I really did like was when it had this airplane, this like Concorde kind of airplane flying, and you think it's going to introduce some new characters. But the whole reason it's there is that when the blackout hits, you've got something to crash into the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just there for visual flair, which I thought was actually quite good. The aliens are sort of very manipulative. There's more characters involved. You know, there's the two sets of central characters, but you also got this psychic guy. You've got the female general who's quite integral to it as well. And, you know, this alien who's sort of stepping in. I found it a bit muddled. And it sort of it span its wheels for quite a while.
It's an interesting counterpoint to Sputnik, because Sputnik's story was so focused and so, you know, grounded. You know, they kept it in one place with like these two characters, really, really focused and drew it out. And then it gets a bit more, you know, bombastic as, you know, leads towards the end. This film is like spreading the canvas like as big as possible, you know, like the whole world has been wiped out except for this small part of Russia or something. Yeah.
Which is funny, isn't it? You know, I suppose every country, you know, is going to sort of center its story on itself. So we're very used to sort of seeing Los Angeles being the epicenter for something, or somewhere in America. But no, all of a sudden, you know, sort of this outskirts of Moscow is the most important part of the planet. All of a sudden, I didn't enjoy it that much. I thought it was a bit. You know, it was way over long for a start, and I think its canvas was way too big for it to sort of give any weight to, really.
Well, especially when you consider that they haven't resolved the story.
Leading
into the next chapter. This interesting. Before we pass judgment on the with the scores, I just want to say this has been quite a success in its release. It's already been. If you exclude premium video on demand releases, it was number one in our DTV chart. It was the number one selling DTV film. And in its second week, it's done even better. It's actually climbed up the official top 100 chart on which we base our DTV chart. It's actually doing really well in the top 100. I think it's like number four or five or something like that. And it's ahead of Jiu-Jitsu. it's done better than Jiu-Jitsu in its second week. So Blackout was out in its second week. Jiu-Jitsu was out in its first week, and it beat a new entry of Jiu-Jitsu. I think that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive, especially with a no-name cast.
You know, exactly.
There's no names to sort of hang it on. Yeah. Okay, Rich, what are you going to give the Blackout Invasion?
I'm going to go 7 on this one.
All right, I'm going 5. I think it is visually impressive, but I thought story-wise, it wasn't working for me at all. Mm-hmm. So that is a 5 and a 7 for Blackout Invasion Earth. Our next review is Robot Riot. Awakening with no memories of their former selves, a small group of people find themselves pitted against the latest robot fighting machines while a crazy general watches from his control room. Was this an asylum film or not? I don't think it was it?
No, but I can completely understand why you would say that.
It's not far removed from that sort of budget. I think it does... Yeah. Okay with you know, special effects and stuff, but there are some big holes in this film for sure. Let's go to Steve to begin with.
Reminded me of something like Predators crossed with robot jocks in a way. You know, the old 80s, I think it was. The main characters are okay, not the best acting in the world, but the general really, really was over the top and pissed me off.
Didn't he just?
He was hammier than a hammy ham. I don't know what to say. You know, it was the hammiest performance we've seen for a while, I think.
It was pure gammon, really.
Gammon, yeah, that's it.
But I enjoyed it. It was nice. Swift did exactly what it wanted to do.
no messing about. And like you say, I thought the effects were actually quite good for the budget. That it worked quite well.
Mm.
Obviously, not exactly very detailed, but I think what they did with it was really good.
Yep, Rich.
Same as Steve, Robot Jocks and Predators also came to mind, as well as other films set around hunting ground kind of scenarios. Kill Mode as well for the for the robots. It's nothing, again, nothing we haven't seen before. It does initially appear like it's some kind of Asylum production, but I think there's a lot more to it than that. I actually found the story and the setup was handled really well, quite intriguing. The characters were quite interesting. There was some surprises. So early on in the film, there's a character gets stabbed, which I was quite taken aback at happening. I didn't expect that. The asylum style robots are pretty good. The smaller ones are better. The spider mechs.
Yeah.
I thought they were all pretty good. The observers and stuff. It reminded me, again, we talked about 2099 Social Protocol earlier, that kind of, you know, observation room kind of setting was, you know, where they cut back and forth between it. Yeah, I thought it was, I think it's an interesting film. Well, you know, if you're a sci-fi fan and you know, you're interested in robot, I don't understand the Robot Riot title, I've got to be honest. Mm-hmm. I don't think that fits it well.
Yeah.
But if you're quite interested in seeing something that's about, you know, soldiers, people basically who've been selected for an experiment, let's say, or a test kind of situation. They don't really know what's going on. Then they're gradually working out what it's all about. I think, it's definitely worth seeing. I'd recommend it.
Yeah, I echo your guys' opinions on this one, but for the most part, I mean, there are some sort of silly bits here. The general, for example, as we talked about, is so over the top. It is unclear as to what the actual agenda is that he's sort of doing. The thing with, you know, you mentioned that sort of stabbing bit at the beginning. That was really, really interesting. But it's not really developed enough. And in fact, that particular character just disappears from the film and is replaced by something similar sort of later on. But it's just not really developed enough, and how that sort of fits in with everything else. But two characters get killed in the most stupid ways possible. And, you know, it's almost like forgotten about in a second. But some of the dialogue is actually really good. You know, I actually did enjoy some of the exchanges. Like one of the female characters sort of basically meets one of the, is it called Brock or somebody? And she basically sort of says like, oh, you know, you've got like sort of 6 days of rations in your backpack. You've got like a day's worth of water. Good luck. You know, I just, it had a sort of rhythm to it. I just thought it was really good. I was on board with a lot of this. Yeah, the robots themselves, not too bad. You know, I wish they'd went the, you know, I wish they could have afforded the stop motion approach rather than sort of this sort of fake CGI bit, but there you go. But overall, yeah, not bad at all.
So what are you going to score it, Mike?
I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
I will join you on a 6.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll go a 7.
Cool. Okay, 2 sixes and a 7 for Robot Riot. Our short shot this week is Burnt. A young couple move into their new house and discover the previous owners have left an old toaster. That's about all I can say about the premise, really. But haunting shenanigans ensue. So this sort of joins a sort of small group of films where, on paper, it sounds like the stupidest idea ever. But actually, the execution helps make what is basically an inanimate object quite sort of scary and, you know, generally a threat. So, you know, like the drone that we covered, Rich.
Yes.
Ages ago, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds like the most stupidest thing ever, but, you know, they executed it really well. And I think they do something similar here, actually. I quite liked what I saw.
That's Steve, a good comparison, I think.
What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was for a short film, it actually made me kind of care about the characters.
Hmm.
A lot of the times, that's one of the things I don't really like about shorts. You don't really get that much character development. But this one, for some reason, it just skipped it, and you actually, me personally, actually cared about what happened to them. And there's also quite a couple of nasty bits as well, to be fair.
Oh, the bit where he stands on the plug.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's where you know the film's got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nearly as bad as a nail in Home Alone.
Yes.
It's awful.
That's really bad. Rich, over to you. What do you think?
Yeah, this exceeded my expectations. It's 11 minutes long. It's the first one of the first films, I think, from a company called Strain Pictures, and it's written and directed by Danny Morgan.
That's it.
He was a writer and actor. Did a film called Double Date a while back, which has done quite well, I think.
He wrote that. One? I think it's a vampire one.
It might be. I don't know. I'll be honest, I haven't seen it.
I think I've seen the trailer for it ages ago.
But this has got ties to like Proportion Productions. So we've got Scott Jeffrey and Rebecca Matthews are the producers. I think Scott Jeffrey did Clown Doll, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And it also stars Becca Hirani, who's done lots of the Proportion Pictures films. And Scott Chambers is her boyfriend in the movie. They're moving in together, getting a new place. He's kind of the main character, really. But yeah, it's just a perfectly told story, really. I mean, they cover so much ground in 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's including credits. You know, all the sequences are very well handled, including, like you say, the one towards the beginning where he stands on the plug. It's just, it's simple, but very effective. It's a comical film. It's a film about people being killed by a toaster. So it's a comedy, but it's played completely straight, basically. And that's, you know, that deadpan approach really works well. There's a whole string of events involving, you know, that it's just very creative about how you think of how can you get what can you get this toaster to do. I won't go through them because that spoils all the pleasures of the movie, but you know, obviously it involves, you know, things like burning stuff, and you know, stuff with the plug, stuff with the cord. It's got a nice little a slice of toast. Yeah, that's a really clever bit with with the slice of toast. Very clever. And there's a little coda towards the end, which is quite amusing as well. I can't recommend this enough. Really, I've watched it twice. I think it's really really solid.
It is very good indeed. Yeah, we'll put the link in the footnotes as we usually do for the shorts. So please check it out. That is Burnt. Our DTV throwback this week is Julia X. When Julia goes on I need to do this in the right voice. It's you know, it's a shame we don't have any rom-com music. You know, rom-com trailer music. So let's see if I can read this again. When Julia goes on a date with a stranger she just met on the internet, little did she know that violent torment he'd be putting her through. But then again, the same could be said for the stranger. So this is a film I saw a while ago, and I was quite surprised to see it on Amazon Prime. So I suggested it to you, Rich, as a throwback, and you reacted a bit different to what I expected.
I can't remember what I said, but it was like, what have you, it was kind of like, what have you, what have you picked? Like, I can't believe you've, you picked this for us. I know you've kind of been through the Spit on Your Grave trilogy, mm-hmm. I think, this year.
I have.
Which I thought would have dampened your appetite for
I've seen all five of the I Spit on Your Grave films, okay. Unfortunately.
But yeah, this is nasty. This is a nasty film.
So the setup of this is, as we said, Julia has gone on this date with Kevin Sorbo. This is what attracted me to the film originally, is the fact that it's Kevin Sorbo, you know, Mr. Hercules himself, you know, playing...
He's a Christian as well.
Playing so. Well against type, but yeah, as this sort of serial killer guy who abducts her and sort of tortures her. He brands her with the X, which, you know, apparently he brands all his victims with a different letter, and he's up to X, which sort of should tell you a lot. But then some, you know, you get a certain point in the film where the tables are turned, basically, in amazing fashion. But it's incredibly convoluted because, as we sort of talked about another film, like, how the hell did they know to go to that place? You know, it's incredibly...
Yeah. How did they know it was him?
Yeah.
For starters.
How do they know that, yeah, it was him? Or, you know, or did they think he was just some sort of misogynistic arsehole they were going to sort of pick up and do, and then it turned out to be something, you know, much, much worse. But anyway, it escalates. This is a black comedy, guys. It is purely a black comedy. You know, yes, it has a nasty streak to it, that's for sure. But Kevin Sorbo's character is brilliant. You know, he's nasty as hell, but he's got this sort of sense of humour that goes with it, which I thought was really good. The bit that's outstanding for me is when Jessica, who's Julia's sister, goes next door and picks up what's the guy's name, the actor. He was really big for a while, wasn't he?
Joel David Moore.
He was in everything.
He was in Hatchet, I think he was.
He was in the Hatchet films. He was in Bones, the TV series. He turned up in a lot of stuff playing very similar characters. But this bit where he's tied to a chair thinking something sexy and kinky is going to happen, and this poor Kevin Sorbo sat opposite him, you know, sort of tied up with barbed wire and shit, and having this conversation. And it's just hilarious. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, the character he plays grates on you after a while. You think you can't wait to get rid of him. But, you know, the beginning of that conversation I thought was superb. I thought it was brilliant. It's a strange film, Rich. It is definitely a strange film.
And they made it in 3D.
Yes, that was the weird thing as well. But, you know, it sort of develops into, like, basically a live-action Tom and Jerry cartoon, you know. Not the new kid-friendly sort of Tom and Jerry, but the real old-school stuff where they used to beat the shit out of each other and wreck the house. You know, it's that kind of thing. And, yeah, you know, it is nasty, that's for sure. But, I really liked it.
it's, like you say, it is the blackest of black comedies, to be fair. I mean, the amount of shit that Kevin Sorbo has done to him is unbelievable. You know, that he's still kind of even,
well, but he's sort of enjoying it.
Conscious. Oh yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, bring it on. I'm loving it. And then the Carpenters thing though, as well, with the iPod.
Oh yeah.
They got the most out of that license, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's a crazy film. It's certainly not for everyone. I totally agree.
Definitely not.
But So what are your thoughts on the film, Rich?
Yeah, well, say apart from, I could tell that it was supposed to be comical in places, but for the most part, it wasn't. I mean, it's got a really unusual, because it was shot in 3D. It's got a very unusual look to quite a few of the scenes, you know, in terms of the foreground and the background and stuff, so you can kind of tell that. So that gives an interesting dynamic. But then at the same time, you think, well, why do they do it in 3D? And then they've got they do all the gimmicky stuff of holding out the hammer, you know, like right in front and, you know, dangling in front of the audience and stuff. And this, it did actually get a 3D release here in the UK because it came out on Blu-ray with the 3D version. It was made in 2010, but it came out over here in 2014 on Kaleidoscope, I think. The Joel David Moore turning up was quite a nice surprise. I didn't quite expect him, but then while I was watching it, I looked at the cover again and spotted another actor's name, which then spoiled it because that actor turns up
in the very final scene.
In the very final scene. So that was a shame because that would have been a really nice surprise if that hadn't been spoiled by me checking the cover or cast list. Kevin Sorbo, I think, was miscast. It's interesting to see him in a role like this, especially considering he basically only makes Christian movies and that these days. But I don't think he's a strong enough actor to pull it off. I did like the girls who played, the actresses who played Julia and Jessica. I thought they were very strong. The stuff with the flashbacks as to why they became the way they are is pretty grim stuff. I mean, if you're talking about this as a comedy or whatever, those are definitely not comical.
No.
Those are definitely not comical scenes. There's some interesting production design. So I think, like, the girls, there's a bedroom that we see Jessica in this in one of the rooms in the bedroom, I think, and it's very eye catching. It's all supposed to be, you know, run down and knackered and that, but there's some color and stuff in there, so I think that's got there to say. The fact they attracted some, you know, notable actors into it, but yeah, for the most, I would steer clear of. I mean, I'm not against movies like this, you know, Ravage we watched and it's quite engaging and stuff, but this was just, yeah, just I felt this was more like an Uwe Boll kind of Seed kind of grimness or Captivity.
I don't think
it was that grim.
No, I mean, I don't know. Is it because of the comic undertone, you think?
No, I didn't like it from the start. I don't know what it was. I mean, I like Saw. You know, it's not. I'm not shy of some of this stuff. I just didn't think it was. I didn't like the way it was going. I think the tables turning thing is quite good, but again, I don't know. Maybe I'm a bit tired of, you know, maybe I've seen too many of these kinds of movies done better. But I just thought this was just a bit too sleazy, really. The way the women are presented, it's a little bit not as sleazy as, again, some examples.
There's no actual nudity or anything, is it? You know, it doesn't go that sort of exploitation route.
Not that it doesn't go to that degree. No, it's more about, you know, focusing on their the way they're dressed and stuff like that. But I'm quite surprised that you're so enamored of it, Mike. Steve, do you sort of fit some? Are you more with?
Mike, I'm in the middle, I'd say.
In the middle.
I did like this. I mean, I've watched it twice now. Obviously, you know, I reviewed it a long time ago. It was interesting rewatching it, especially after your comments, Rich, because I hadn't watched it before. You'd email me going, "Oh my god, this is appalling." I thought, "Oh, if I, is, you know, my sort of looking at this through rose tinted glasses, maybe." But I still thought it was very good. Yeah,
It's interesting that we've all. It just made me think. It's interesting how we've all got these things that are too much for us, or that we don't like. You know. It's like, you know, I'd say, oh, let's watch this film. And you'd be like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. No, I'm not watching a film where a dog gets hurt or something like, like that.
That Russian one.
The Russian one, yeah.
Where they teach the dogs to carry the bombs. The
bombs and stuff. And you're like, no, couldn't possibly. And I'm like, no, I'm watching this. And I'm like, Mike, I thought you were more sensitive than this.
No, couldn't watch that. Now, interestingly, one of the other films I suggested was something called Bound to Vengeance, which is a bit different. It sort of starts off at the point where most of these sort of films end, with this girl who's been she's been abducted and abused and all the rest of it, but she at the that's all happened off screen before the film even starts. The film starts with the moment she actually breaks free and gets the better of her captor. And she's about to sort of escape this place when she finds evidence that there are other people like her being held captive. So she uses the guy to sort of go and find the other girls, so which is really good. I thoroughly recommend that one as well, even if we don't end up covering it. Anyway, we don't score the DTV throwbacks, but on that recommendation, or you know, I enjoyed it. Steve kind of enjoyed it. Richard absolutely hated it. but it's available on Prime. We'll put the links in as usual, so check it out or not. And that is the end of our mammoth show. What a way!
Oh, Jesus, can we go to bed now?
What a way to kick off the year. 3.5 hours of recording. I'm sure we'll whittle that down before we sort of pass it on to you guys. But thank you for listening. Thank you for Rich and Steve for joining me at this start of the year.
No problem.
We got lots happy more to do stuff it. Coming up, I know. So, yeah, happy new year, everyone. Look forward to recording new episodes. So, listen in again.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.